It's always a pleasure to be here. I'd like to thank organizers for inviting me. And today I'm going to talk about cell modeling, modeling of cell movement on soft adhesive substrates. And this is new work, as part of it is not published, and in done collaboration with my former students and postdocs, Falko Ziebert and Suman Swaminathan, and visiting students from Germany, Jakob Lober. I will start with really short introduction because many aspects of this biological machinery were introduced already by many speakers. And I will also try to keep equations minimal. So I will present relatively simple model of based on non-local Gisbrook-Landau equation. And in my talk, I focus on navigation of cells on heterogeneous substrates and stick slip motion and bipedal movements of cells. And I will entertain you with this hyperactive cells, which exhibit this motion, which we call bipedal. Probably we saw already these pictures a million times. So the cytoskeleton is a complex system. We know it's composed of many components acting by the way, is any ruler here or a pointer? Where? Oh, yeah. No, this one. Okay. Actin filaments, microtubules, and molecular motors. So microtubules, molecular motors, they form the skeleton of cells, and motors perform motor functions. They move them around, and crosslinks, they keep things together. And what is really important is that this is out of equilibrium system. It's driven out from equilibrium by the many processes, including, for example, hydrolysis of ATP. And this hydrolysis of ATP, for example, drives assembly and disassembly of actin filaments, and also fuels molecular motors who can move along microtubules and align them, shear them, and form various structures, which you already heard several times, like asters, contractile bundles, and many, many others. What is also important is that cytoskeleton is responsible for multiple functions in living cells, from transport to cell division. I enjoyed the talk of previous speaker who really described how this can be things can be described in simple framework. And what I will focus on something a little bit different, cell motility. In fact, activity of cytoskeleton is responsible for movement of cells on various substrates. And our body contains variety of cells, and they perform various functions. For example, from wound healing, like I have many movies in my talk. I'll show some of them. Okay, this for example, fibroblast cells, they play a role in wound healing and wiring of brain and repair of damage. This is my favorite one. So there are fish keratocytes moving on rigid substrates. This is the cells which are kind of Ferrari of cell motility. They move relatively fast on straight line. Other cells are much slower. Also, moving cells play important role in immune response. And also what is really interesting is that motility of cells is responsible for proliferation of various cancers. And understanding of motility may potentially lead to new treatment strategy for invasive cancer cells. There is also a big difference between moving cells and cell at rest. So cell, you hardly can see it, but maybe you see there is a thin line, so it's cell membrane. So cell which in rest are relatively symmetric, they're almost round, with the nuclei which is located in the middle of the cell and microtubules protruding in all directions. And well, when the cell response on various stimuli, like mechanical or chemical stimuli, it polarizes, the nuclei migrates backward, microtubules extend forward, and various growth factors are expressed at the front of the cell membrane, and cell starts to move. And of course, this is extremely complex biological process, which I probably will not describe in detail. What I will show you is a minimal model, which is mostly physical, based on really simple assumptions and minimal knowledge of biological processes. And of course, it has disadvantages. It's highly simplified, But advantage is that it's, we can treat it, we can solve it, and we can possibly gain some insight on cell motility. Okay, so how cells move? Of course, there are various cells. They have, may have different mechanisms of motility. What I'm mostly talking today is keratocytes, is fish keratocytes, which move very fast. And these cells move due to this interesting process, which is called treadmilling, when the actin filaments, they grow at the front end of the membrane, and push it forward. And at the same time, they, whoops, what is it? Okay, <it's laughs> maybe I should think twice about this mechanism. Okay, so what really happens is called treadmilling. So they grow on this side and push forward the membrane. On opposite side, they disassemble and they attach to the substrate via certain adhesive complexes, which are in this case integrin proteins. And this way, they can transmit momentum to the cell. Of course, also molecular motors play an important role in this process as well. Okay, and at the back of the cell, there are other processes going on, at least for keratocytes. This actin network, which is formed at the front, is weakened, and molecular motors bundle the actin filaments and perform some kind of muscle contraction. They form stress fibers, and this process, I believe, responsible for the overall shape of the cell. They also may play some part in the motility, but mostly people believe that it's responsible for traction distribution and shape of the cell. What is also remarkable is that a relatively well-controlled experiment can be performed with this very complex system. And I will refer to the experiment performed in the group of Borisi, when the nuclei of the cell were cut off and only lamellipodium segments were left. And even these segments of lamellipodia seen layer of actin filaments and molecular motors showed this very interesting transition. So it was pretty much round and rest. And once it was stimulated, for example, by a micromanipulator, it started to move and assumed crescent shape like a real keratocyte cell. And we may ask many questions which are inspired by this interesting system. What is the nature of transition to moving state? And what is the nature of symmetry breaking? How does it happen? What are physical or biological mechanisms? And how shape and motions are related? And how can we describe navigation of these cells on complex engineered substrates? Which will be essentially focus of my talk. And I should say this topic is extremely important, and there are many groups which contributed to understanding of cell motility. Many people actually sitting here, including Carsten Kruse, Jean-François, Jack Prost, and Frank Ulicher, and many, many others. And the most popular approach to the date, when you describe the cell as moving interface, essentially sharp line, and you prescribe some sort of kinematic condition at the interface, and you see how this line moves. And of course, there are pluses and minuses when you implement this approach. The plus, obviously, it's rather intuitive, so you can say that you describe the cell membrane. But there are also fundamental difficulties. And they are both numerical and, maybe more important, physical difficulties. First of all, it's really very hard to treat this moving interface problem. And when you know that, it's extremely hard to do it numerically. But what is more important, that it's in order to advance the interface, you have to prescribe some sort of kinematic conditions or boundary conditions at the interface, which actually are not well known, not well defined, because the cell motility essentially is a bulk process, which is determined by what happens inside the cell, and you have to somehow integrate it and prescribe only at one point, which results in multiple problems. And what is usually people do, they assume a certain shape of the cell and just study distribution, say, of stresses or traction inside the cell. I also should mention two approaches which are somewhat similar to what I'm going to talk today. So one by Katarina Krishner and Alexander Mikhailov, who described not really moving cells, but moving spots, and they obtained similar shapes in the reaction diffusion system. And by Michael Katz and David Marinduz and their collaborators, which they use active gel framework. What I'm going to do today is something different, and what people mostly do in material science, which we call phase field approximation, when we don't track the interface of the cell at all. So what instead, we replace the interface by a smooth field, which we call the order parameter, which changes from 0 to 1, 0 outside the cell and 1 inside the cell. And surprisingly, mostly independently, these two approaches was presented by us and by Herbie Levin. And conceptually, they are similar, but they are very different in details. And I also learned that there is also a similar approach was, I learned it on this workshop by Axel Voigt. Okay, so actually phase field approach was proved to be very efficient to describe directed solidification, fracture formation, also used in granular matter, and I contributed to this quite a bit. And also in superconductivity and superfluidity, so the parameter you can interpret like a phase field which dresses up point vortices. So this is a cartoon of my model. So I have a cell which adheres to substrate. And substrate, for simple, we consider the following setting. So we have rigid substrate, which is covered by thin deformable layer, and the cell adheres to substrate. So our description is two-dimensional, so there is no extension in this direction. Cell is flat. And the shape of the cell we describe by the phase field. In order to describe the adhesion, we introduce density of adhesive sites. So I'm not talking about focal adhesion. I assume that adhesive ligands are more or less uniform distributed, which apparently not such a bad approximation for keratocytes. And inside the cell, we describe orientation of actin network by polarization vector P. And we also describe displacement inside this thin layer by two-dimensional vector U. Okay, these are our equations. And now let me explain how does it work. So to describe the shape of it's not an I think it's projector might be there. Okay. I used my favorite Ginzburg-Landau equation. Rho is scalar of the parameter, which changes from 0 to 1, 0 outside the cell inside, and 1 is inside the cell. And people from biological community likes to call it the first Fitzhugh-Nagumo equation, but it's probably not very useful. Okay. So how does it work? So here we have a diffusion coefficient, which describes the rigidity of the cell membrane. So if it's very large, so it will be penalty to deform the membrane, large penalty to deform the interface between cell and if there is no cell. And we have free energy here, density of free energy. And this free energy has two minima. One is at zero and one is at one. And this parameter delta controls the relative depth of this minima. So if delta is small, the minima which corresponds to one to cell is below other minima. And means if you make a segment, a fragment of the cell, it will expand. And if delta is larger than one half, this fragment will shrink. And this is not good. So we have to conserve the amount of material. So cells should not disappear. To fix this, we introduced a conservation constraint. So to this parameter delta, which you can interpret like a pressure difference between the phases, you add this quantity, so you integrate the other parameter of the entire domain and subtract initial volume of the cell. And this way you can prevent cell from shrinking. Okay, second thing, so which we really try to introduce this contractile dynamics inside the cell in a very simplified way. So I see it's not precise at all, but somehow it works. So idea was that inside the cell we have some active stresses due to actin bundles driven by molecular motors. And to do it right, you have to introduce a distribution of stresses here. And this is basically a very simple equation. So you have some stresses relaxed to a certain equilibrium value inside the cell, and they are driven by actin polymerization and action of molecular motors. And from vector, you can build a tensor, as we show here. And we did not do it. We simplified these equations. We dropped, we said that relaxation is instant, so, and we expressed the stress as just second trunk tensor, which we built from polarization field. And we did something, even something simpler, which is not really good, but it's apparently it works. So we calculated the eigenvalue of this tensor, and we added it, subtracted it from this interfacial pressure difference. So this somehow we don't have anisotropy of the stress tensor, but apparently it works very well. So I can show you that if we neglect this term, so we have cells which look like fibroblasts. They have triangular shape. And we when we crank it up, we have this kind of cells, like keratocytes. So with this term, we can control the shape. And in order to advect the cell, we introduce this term into the equation. So we advect the interface along direction of polarization field, which we calculate sort of consistently. I will show you in a moment. And the advection rate is proportional to the density of adhesive ligands. So if cell doesn't adhere to the substrate, it can transfer the momentum. So this explains why we have to introduce this term. And this coefficient actually depends on the property of substrate and friction coefficient. Actually, a lot of biology goes in. I may mention it a little bit later. And then we have to write down the equation for polarization dynamics inside the cell. And I believe these equations are very complicated, but we did something very simple. So forget for the moment about these two terms. You have very simple dynamics. Basically, it says that inside the cell, actin filaments degrade with the rate tau 1. And they grow at the membrane with the rate which is proportional to coefficient beta, which is essentially polymerization rate. So as I mentioned, that we have essentially a step function from 1 inside the cell and 0 outside the cell. And this quantity is not 0 only at the interface. So basically, with this term, we prescribe that filaments grow at the interface. And this basically is just small diffusion coefficient to describe various processes like diffusion of polarization or relaxation of polarization. And these two terms, they're somewhat auxiliary. It basically kills actin polarization outside of the cell. Outside of the cell, this quantity is 0, and polarization decays with very fast rate. We don't want to have it outside of our cell, because it's not advected with the cell. And this term describes the coupling to distribution of molecular motors. It appears to that this term is not very important, so if you drop it, this still model still works, but agreement a little bit better if you include it. And you can motivate this term from, again, very simple physical consideration. So you can write down the equation for the balance of molecular motors. So they it's a concentration of motors. They diffuse with certain rate inside the cell. They expressed this other rate. They advected along actin filaments. And this term describes the difference between front and back of the cell. So at the back of front of the cell, action of molecular motors is inhibited by various factors, and in the back of the cell, it's not inhibited as strongly as in the front. And then what you can do, you can neglect all these terms and express concentration of motors just as this quantity. Okay, a couple of equations and I'm done with this. Okay, this is equation again for density of adhesive ligands. It's somewhat long, but physics is simple. So this is basically, there are two processes. Attachment rate of ligands to the surface and detachment rate. And motors can attach only when you have actin filaments because they link actin filaments to the substrate. And this is the second term is collective attachment that has the following input. So once you have some ligands which attach to the filaments, they reduce fluctuations of the membrane and other ligands will attach with higher probability. So this we call collective attachment and we include it in the simplest form. And these two terms describe detachment rates. So basically, this is just saturation of concentration of adhesive ligands. It can't exceed certain critical concentration. And this term describes coupling to deformation of the substrate. You can imagine the following situation. So once ligands attach to the substrate and you start to stretch the substrate or deform it, they start to fall off because they are very short. And we basically introduce a step function. Here is deformation of substrate. And if it exceeds critical deformation, the ligands will fall off with a rather high rate. And finally, we describe deformation of substrate. It's So first, what we did, we replaced deformation of substrate by a single spring. This is we call brick approximation. It's actually a quite good approximation, but it works in most of the cases. But in the end of my talk, I say what happens if you really treat displacement of substrate locally. But basically, so we integrated the deformation of substrate over the entire area of the cell, and because the cell is a force dipole, so its propulsion force is balanced by the friction force. You will have, you will stretch the substrate, and this we describe by a single spring, and the amplitude of the deformation is proportional to the either rate of propulsion force, this polymerization times adhesion, or friction force. They should be the same. So we put here the friction force, which is proportional to the velocity of the center of mass. Okay, that's basically it. It's somewhat complicated model, but it's still you can understand each term in this equation, which is relatively good. And other good thing that you can solve it. And you can solve it fast. So the code was implemented actually by me on the graphical processing units. And we run it on rather big, in rather big integration domain. And it takes a few minutes to integrate it. So it's very fast. So this is really great thing because we can really sweep the parameter space and get a lot of details. So basically what happens? Non-locality comes from the conservation constraint.
Yeah.
Yes. So actually, this is somewhat artificial, but it's convenient. We're working how to do something different. So the restriction is, disadvantage is it's only work for one cell. So if you want to do multiple cells, you have to do something different. Okay, this is a phase diagram. This is the elasticity of substrate, and this is adhesiveness of substrate, or say rate of adhesion, and this is rate of polarization of actin filaments. And you have rather simple phase diagram. So these spots correspond to no motion. If substrate is very squishy, very soft cell, just stop, don't move. So if you increase stiffness of substrate, they start to move, but they move, this shows this kind of inchworm motion or stick slip. And then when you increase the stiffness of substrate even further, there is a transition to steady gliding. I have a couple of movies. This is steady gliding, so we start with symmetric initial conditions and we give cell a kick by introducing small initial polarization, and then it moves and you don't to stimulate it anymore, it just keeps going. If you reduce the stiffness of substrate instead of steady motion, you have this kind of unsteady motion, which is somewhat complicated. It's not exactly periodic. So it stops for some time. It builds adhesion strength. It's yellow shows concentration of adhesive ligands. Then it makes some step and then stop again. And because when it moves, it just exerts stresses on the substrate, and the stresses, they promote detachment of adhesive ligands. So it has to stop to build adhesive strength again. And what is also interesting is that the onset of motion is subcritical. You can do similar plots against any parameter of the model. And for large range of parameters, I should say we didn't explore all the parameters of the model. But what we observed always is the same scenario, that once you stimulate the cell, it moves at final speed. So there is no cells moving arbitrarily slow. So the transition to motion is subcritical. And once the cell starts to move, it also becomes non-round. It develops some anisotropy. So a good thing about our model is that we can do some analytical work, and I did some exercise. I calculated this. This is dimensionless velocity, this is dimensionless propulsion strength, and it shows subcritical transition. So you have this bifurcation. Okay. Other thing which you can do now, you can study interaction of the cell with complex engineered substrate. For example, this substrate, so when you have steps in adhesiveness or steps in elasticity or many, many other. So I'm doing in time. Okay. Okay, this is the first example. So how the cell can solve complex navigation problem. Apparently, cells don't have brains. at least we don't know about them. But then somehow they manage to navigate on complex substrates. This is a substrate when you have steps in adhesion. So here's adhesive part, here's non-adhesive part. And apparently, like people, cells don't want to be on slippery ground. They avoid it. So we stimulated the cell, it moves. Now it hits the step, and then it sinks for a little bit, and then goes back. So you can think about very simple physics. So what happens when it kicks the step? So here you have low adhesiveness. So as a result, when itself moves into this part, you have adhesive gradient which pulls the cell backward. Okay. So cells can solve this complex navigation problem. Now,
sorry, what happens to the polarization field when you have this
switch? Repolarizes eventually.
Repolarizes.
Yes. So adhesion drives polarization. So everything is coupled. Okay, this is more difficult problem to solve. And actually, this experiment, which was performed in the group of Danuzer at that time in ETH, when they microprinted fibronectin stripes on glass slides. So this green is, or gray is fibronectin, which has high adhesiveness, and these gray stripes, low adhesiveness regions. And what they observed is that the cells move parallel to the stripes, with the centroid of the cell located exactly in the middle of the stripe. Okay, see, so they move. Then it's in the end of the movie, cell managed to hit something, and then it again moves parallel to the stripe. So we did something similar. So blue is high adhesiveness stripe, dark is black is low adhesiveness stripe, and cells do exactly the same as an experiment. So they position themselves symmetrically with respect to the stripe and move parallel to the stripes. And to our great surprise, when we decreased a little bit the adhesiveness of the stripe, we saw something totally different. So instead of moving parallel to the stripes, cell stops, hesitates for quite a bit, and then you see what happens. Yes, it moves perpendicular to the stripes. So completely different behavior. I was very excited, and I gave a call to Gabor Gzus, and he told me that it's very hard to do experimentally to change adhesiveness of the stripes. But what they can do, but they still didn't do it, I should say, they can they can change the width of these stripes. So they can print stripes of different widths. This is not that hard. Okay. It has some kind of complex process going on. There is coupling between shape, orientation, it's a complex dynamical system. It goes back and forth, and sometimes it shows random motion. I will show you trajectories.
Your initial condition is that the cells
move yes, moves in this direction. We stimulate it in this direction. Yes. I will show you more. That's a lot of things going on inside this cell. It's not passive. It's okay, these are trajectories. For the cell moving on strong adhesive stripes, the centroid of the cell is parallel to the stripes. Actually, I have stripes here, but you can't see them. For the stripes of low adhesion, it moves perpendicular to the stripes, and it randomly changes direction. So it's not periodic. It's probably some kind of deterministic chaos, because it's a multidimensional system. And of course, in experiment, you see cells doing crazy things, but it could be for totally different reasons. And somewhere in between, it's actually you have combination of these two types of motion. It moves along the stripe for some time, and then changes direction, then moves along again. Okay, now this movement on the stripes of different widths. Actually, was something quite interesting. So it's if stripes are wide enough, as shown here, the cell moves parallel to the stripes, which probably we would expect. If you reduce the width of the stripes, then we have transition when the cell starts to move perpendicular. So it moves. So before moving perpendicular to the stripe, it shows some sort of bipedal or rocking motion, like a man. And then it starts to move perpendicular to the stripes. But if we reduce the width of the stripe even further, there is a re-entrant transition. So the cells start to move again parallel to the stripes. So, but transition is of different nature. So So the cell stretches along the stripes and detaches from this stripe. And moves like a train along the rails. Okay, I'm still waiting when this prediction will be confirmed or disproved. We'll see. So a few other things which I would like to show. I have like 5 minutes. Bipedal motion, which was observed recently in the group of Julie Thériault, and a theory was proposed by Frank Ulicher and his collaborators. When what they see that cells often move like men, so they call it bipedal motion. When the rear edge of the cell retracts in out of phase manner. So that moves back and forth, so it's out of phase oscillation. So rear edge of the cell. And to explain this motion, Ulicher and his collaborators suggested a simple mechanical model, which essentially based on cell elasticity. So, and we don't have cell elasticity in our model, but we have elasticity of substrate, which possibly work the same way. In order to understand what is going on in this situation, we introduced local deformation of substrate. So now instead of using this brick approximation for the substrate, we really resolve deformation of substrate locally. So it's a little bit complicated. So now you have this elasticity equation you have to integrate across the thin elastic layer, and you have traction, which is due to a propulsion force, which we assume is okay, this due to polymerization of actin filaments, and friction force. Of course, this actually you shouldn't really separate them. It's the same force essentially, which has both propulsion component and friction component, but it's somewhat convenient to make separation because force cell doesn't exert a net force on the substrate. Total traction should be zero. And from other assumptions that friction is proportional to the amount of adhesive frequency, we can calculate the friction force. So you can interpret like some sort of constitutive relation for traction. So if to avoid questions about force balance, so this is equation at the surface, so you don't have this divergence of stress at zero condition, so it's inside this layer. This is after integration across the surface. Okay, this is how this looks like. This deformation of substrate, there are extra terms due to finite thickness, but we neglected them. This is the term due to propulsion, and this is essentially you can interpret term due to friction, and from this condition you can calculate this coefficient. Okay, so what it does, so we can obtain now traction distribution, and they look pretty reasonable. For keratocytes, you have maximum of traction near the front edge. You have also some extra maxima near the edges, but it's believed to due to contractile bundles, which you don't have in the model. But it's more or less looks reasonable. And we also can explore the phase diagram, and what basically we reproduced what we had before, but in addition to stick slip motion, we discovered a few new states, which is bipedal motion here, and new type of movement, which possibly also observed experimentally, but was not reported to the moment, which we called Vendrin bipedal. We will see the difference. So this is a bipedal motion. When this hyperactive particle, so this edges of so retract out of phase, and if we increase stiffness a little bit further, so this motion becomes unstable, and the cell moves, and then it veers off from straight line and starts to wander all over the integration domain. So it shows pretty much chaotic behavior. Again, so there is no noise in our model except numerical noise, which is pretty small, and you'll see that it's, so we believe it's manifestation of deterministic chaos. So you have multiple modes extracted inside the cell, and they interact. You have finite dimensional system, but maybe with dimension 5. And due to coupling between deformation modes and translation mode, it starts to move all over the place. So in experiment, of course, you see that cells never move on straight line, but it could be more than one reason, I should say. Okay, this is basically illustrates this bipedal motion. This the black line is position of the center of mass, and these two lines show that the detraction of the rear edge of the cell occurs out of phase. So it's an opposite phase. Okay. Now this illustrates this wandering bipedal motion. So the cell moves along straight line and they veers off and start to move all over the place. Okay. Also, what we can understand is interaction of the cell with substrate with say engineered gradient and stiffness, which now experimentalists can do. And what was reported in recent papers that cells tend to select optimal stiffness of substrates. From on very stiff substrates, they migrate towards softer ground, and on very soft ground, they move towards stiffer substrate. And what we also observed that in our model, cells do exactly the same. So here is a very soft part of the substrate, and here is there is a gradient towards stiffer substrate. And on soft substrate, cells move towards hard ground and then stay. They select optimal stiffness, and behavior is opposite if you start on very stiff substrate. They move towards softer parts of substrate. And finally, we also can understand interaction of the cells with step in substrate stiffness. And there are also many experiments, and behavior is somewhat complicated. It's not quite obvious. So people can engineer this substrate, for example, by making pillars, micro pillars of different widths or different height. And if this way they can make a step, so changing the width of the pillars. And what they observed that for cell often move from soft substrate when they encounter the step, they prefer to be on a harder substrate. So they usually pass the step. So either they pass the step, or this is the trajectory of the cell, or they got trapped and move along the boundary. And this is what we also observed. And to another hand, so when the cells start to moving on hard substrate, they encounter the step and they reflect back, as I showed you for the step in adhesiveness. Okay, so I think I will finish. So in our work, we develop minimal continuum model, which is not trivial, but it's still we can have a handle on each term in this model. It captures experimental phenomenology, in particular, it describes subcritical transition to moving states, and it incorporates adhesion dynamics on a phenomenological level, and we were able to reproduce many types of movements of cells and rather non-trivial types, from stick slip to bipedal and even to durataxis. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.
Your last picture was nice, reminding the refraction, kind of total internal reflection of the cell at the boundary.
Yes, it's a good question.
Have you done something like Snell's law for that?
I don't know. Probably not. It's highly nonlinear and depends on many factors. I actually was asked this question maybe already three times. Probably there is something like that, but we don't really know. It depends on many, many factors and the shape of the cell and the angle. So it's probably there is no simple law.
Showed many cell behaviors, and I also know of cells that stay more or less fixed in one point and do oscillations with a well-defined frequency. Does your model also describe that?
Not in the range of parameters we explore, but certainly it can do that too, yes. It's enough degrees of freedom. We are mostly interested in the cells which move, but sometimes it happens they don't move and they start to oscillate. I just didn't show.
So the non-locality was this mass conservation.
Yes.
If you use the Carnegie type equation instead, what would happen?
I don't know. We plan to do that. So.
Because you use a non-conserved one, actually.
Yeah, we use non-conserved for the parameter. And there are many pluses and minuses. Of course, it's simpler and faster. We need to try. So I'm thinking about it.
Can you show the equations again? So I can see how the focal adhesion or the adhesion.
No, there is no focal adhesion. There is adhesion.
It's not really focal.
No, it's not focal. No, it's nascent adhesion. So basically, adhesion enters here. So it's so propulsion rate is proportional to the adhesion density, density of adhesive ligands. We don't really have focal adhesion, so it's on this level of description, it will be very hard to introduce.
If you were to access simulation, then the two patches would have different what parameter would be?
Adhesiveness. So this was different parameter, this rate of adhesion.
So it was related to that slide, and I can see he wrote the quasi-spectral method. I was curious about how you integrated the
by quasi-spectral method, yeah. It's very actually efficient for this kind of equations. So it takes almost real time. So what I show you, it actually takes more time to process the movies than to integrate them.
You must make some assumptions about the various diffusivities, for example. Are they
yes.
Or are they very different?
So we try to use numbers which we can learn from literature. And some are known and some are not. So it's
because we know well that when diffusivities are different in reaction diffusion systems, you can get all sorts of interesting instabilities.
Yeah, sure. No, they, no, we don't have these instabilities related to diffusivities. This is for sure. So these diffusivities are relatively small and mostly used for regularization of the field. So just to make sure that we don't have infinite gradients. This is the biggest one, and it essentially controls the width of the interface. So you can say that this, when they become small enough, they're irrelevant. So this is what we use. So there is no Turing instability in this model.
Are you tired?
Another question. So let's say it's a droplet. Let's call it droplet. It has no elasticity. So the elasticity is in the substrate.
Yeah.
So would it sort of model like a droplet of these phoretic swimmers, because they are not elastic, right? Do we know of any such experiment where people use this phoretic swimmers like Ramin described and so on? Mm-hmm. Many of them, but in a droplet, and then put them on the substrate and let them run. Because that would probably, if the substrate is elastic, be
okay. Not to my best knowledge. That's I think it's maybe Zvonimir's droplets can do something like that if you put them on substrate. We should ask him. So it's probably he left. Andreas Bausch. Yeah.
I think Yoshinaga's talk, the Marangoni effect types, surface version of that.
No, but it's not on substrate, on the surface.
No,
on the fluid surface.
Really a bike droplet with this microfluidic swimmer inside, and then could these drive the, actually the droplet?
On the surface, you mean? Not
on the surface.
On the surface. No, not on the fluid surface. I think you find many examples.
And I think we have a talk by Rhoda Hawkins later this afternoon, which is somewhat related. So
maybe
active droplet is moving in an elastic medium. But okay.
And your cell actually does not have any elasticity.
No, it doesn't. No.
So what? So only the phase field keeps it together.
Yeah, right. This conservation constraint. So it's work like effective compressive stress, which keeps it together. So of course, right way to do it would be to derive elasticity equation and couple it to the shape, self shape, which probably makes this equation probably solvable. I don't think it will be easy enough to do to begin. It's possible to do, I agree, but not easy. And it looks like it doesn't change much.
Propose we move on. Let's thank you.